With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. This is part two of week one of our coverage of the World Championship. And it seems like a lot's happened since the last episode of the podcast, which was 2 days ago. Lots happened since then. Lots happened on the table, and the tournament remains incredibly interesting. A lot of the big hitters, the seeds, have gone out. That's been one of the themes. As we record this, there's one result to come, John Higgins, Jamie Jones. If John Higgins loses, then that's a record haul of seeds out, nine. In round one. At the moment, the record of eight has been equaled, which is plenty. By the way, my predictions, for those wondering, I counted it up. I reckon I got 9 of the 15 right for the record. I went for Jones to beat Higgins tonight. I'll take 9, to be honest. That's not bad. We'll get to all the big issues shortly, but I realised what I forgot to do last time was update people, because I know they're hanging on for this. Update people about... We mentioned when we did the predictions, myself, Alan, Neil and Phil Yates, that Neil was running a commentator's quiz on the eve of the Crucible. And he did do it. It was quite a tough school. There was myself, Phil Yates, Philip Studd and Fergal O'Brien. That was the... they were the contenders from Eurosport. But there were various rounds, a lot of it based on the Crucible Almanac. I don't think anyone would say it was easy. It was tough. Now, you know, natural modesty forbids me revealing who won. In fact, it doesn't. I won. I beat them, and that's that. I hope to retain my title next year, but of course there is the curse, the Crucible quiz curse that I've got to contend with. But this is all flim-flam, and a lot of people will be saying, well, so's the rest of it. More seriously, the Crucible debate has been stepped up, of course. It's been talked about all week. It's talked about every year, frankly. But Barry Hearn was in Sheffield on Wednesday, and, you know, was pretty stark in what he was saying to the media about the future of the Crucible. I would refer you to an episode of this podcast, episode 258 from last year, in which I reflected on a conversation I had with Barry last year. And everything that I say on that podcast has now basically come to fruition. Exactly the position. And the position is that it no longer makes sense for World Snooker to have their biggest tournament in their smallest venue when they have attractive commercial offers to take it elsewhere. Barry did various interviews, but the two main ones I think that people have seen, one was with Hazel Irvin on the BBC, and the other was with Rachel Casey on Eurosport. I thought both Hazel and Rachel were excellent, by the way, in the way they conducted those interviews. They asked proper questions and got interesting stuff. From Barry's side, it was pretty stark the way he talked about money trumping history, trumping sentiment, trumping, it seemed, everything. And, of course, the contract runs out in 2027, and the way he was talking... What he was saying was, if Sheffield City Council don't come up with a better venue or a bigger venue or do something to the Crucible, then they'll be off. Which I think is slightly unfair on Sheffield City Council because, you know, councils do not... They're cash-strapped. They don't have a lot of money. It would cost, you know, comfortably £10 million to build a proper venue of the sort they're talking about, maybe more than that. And also, it would take time. You can't just sort of knock it up in the next week. You know, you've got to do a feasibility study, commission an architect to draw up the plans, get planning permission, get the capital together to do it. It would take years, actually. But the ball's been put in their court. Now, their argument might be, well, we've got a building you can play the World Championship in. It's called the Crucible. You know, it's served you well for the last 47 years. But I think it's worth sort of, there's a lot been said about this, and it's understandable because emotions are running high, and sentiment does come into it when it comes to the Crucible for a lot of snooker fans. There were some uncomfortable truths from Barry Hearn. I thought the way he spoke, it seemed a bit distasteful, but in a way he's right. You can't uninvent capitalism. Money does talk. And a lot of players, and I'm not just talking about the sort of title contenders who want to earn, you know, $5 million for winning the World Championship. There are guys lower down the rankings who don't earn a lot of money, who see the opportunity to be guaranteed maybe, you know, five times as much just for losing a match. Now, that's not great in terms of ambition in sport, to just want more money for losing. But they've got to pay bills. They've got to put food on the table. And so I think when he says that for most players, money is the overriding factor, I think he's right. I don't think it's the only factor. And a lot of the older players have spoken about this and spoken about how special the Crucible is. We've heard from people like John Higgins and Mark Williams. Mark Allen's not quite as old. But they've been saying they think it's inevitable it will leave, but they think that's a sad situation. They don't want it to. They just think it will. And that's the reality. He's also right to say, Barry, that, you know, that there is demand from other places, and if they're running a respectable or a responsible, I should say, business, is it right that they turn that money down? But, well, let's go to an email here, because I think Rob O'Connor makes an interesting point. He says, for a while now, you've rebuked the naysayers by claiming snooker's never been in better health. The evidence you present about viewing figures and the increase in the number of tournaments back up what you say. However, I wonder if snooker will prosper, but not as we currently know it. All this talk of the end of the Crucible and cryptic press conferences from the likes of Mark Williams make me think the winds of change are blowing strongly over the horizon. What do you think? Well, Rob, maybe, but the reason for that is because of the demand for snooker. If promoters didn't think snooker was a big deal and they couldn't make money from it, they wouldn't be interested in trying to take the World Championship or trying to establish a different tour. There's been talk of that. It's precisely because of the demand for snooker that that's happening. And World Snooker Tour's job is to meet that demand. And already they've, you know, announced a new tournament in China next season. Obviously the Saudi ranking event. Apparently it's going to be a ranking event in Qatar. Prize money's going up over 20 million. The question Barry asked me, and that was the point of this podcast, episode 258 last year. It's actually called the £20 million question. He said we can get prize money up to 20 million, and that'd be great, because it was 3.5 when he took over at World Snooker. How does he get it up to 40 million? And the conclusions I reached in that, the only way he can do that is to embrace Saudi money and is to go down routes that people maybe don't like. But let's cut to the chase here, because there's a lot been said about this. There's one question above all that matters, okay? There's one question above all, and the answer to the question will determine what happens with the World Championship. And the question is this. Can World Snooker Tour live without the BBC? Can they live without the BBC contract, the money they get from it, and, of course, what it does for snooker in the UK and the prestige and profile of the event? And I think the answer to that question is quite interesting, because if they could, they would have announced probably today that it's going to Saudi Arabia in 2028. I'm sure there's an offer on the table that will be worth a lot of money. The fact that they haven't done that and they're still saying, Sheffield, we want to stay with you, says to me that those ties are not going to be easily cut. Because the BBC, as host broadcaster, want the World Championship in Britain. They may still, if it left Britain, take coverage, but it'd be a very different form of coverage to what we have now. Obviously, Eurosport as well are partners, and they have a broadcast contract. I think it'd be easier for Eurosport if it was in another country, because they're used to just taking sport from wherever it comes from. The BBC's job is to produce the coverage, and the production costs going abroad would be a lot more, and of course the time difference as well doesn't suit British schedules. So the question everyone should be concentrating on is, can World Snooker Tour live without the BBC? If they can, and they take maybe say Netflix come in and say, here's 10 million, we want the rights, they may take that, you know, in theory, and say, thanks for everything BBC for the last 50 years, but we're off. I think more likely they want to stay with them. And if they stay with them, the World Championship will stay in the UK. It doesn't mean it'll stay at the Crucible. It may move from Sheffield. Here's the thing. I mean, I've said this before. Sheffield's been a great supporter of the World Championship, but it's about the Crucible. It's about that building. It's not about Sheffield. To me, the worst result of this would be to go to an arena up the road. The Crucible is empty, playing in a bigger arena. It's not the same. And the other thing I would say is, and I think this is something I haven't heard anyone mention, I could almost guarantee if it left the Crucible and came off the BBC, the format would change for guaranteed. The reason it's 17 days is very simple. When this format was put together originally, it was to guarantee the BBC 3 weekends of sport. So you get the first weekend, the middle weekend, and the final weekend. You can guarantee what will happen because we're told so many things that we're supposed to believe. One of the things we're told is everyone accepts the Crucible is no longer a suitable venue. Well, I can tell you, I don't accept that. That's number one. I think the playing arena is brilliant. Number two, we're told everyone accepts there's not enough room backstage. Well, yes, there is. There's enough room for what they do now. They could do more, and to do more, you need more room. But for 47 years, they've run the tournament with the room that there is, okay? So I don't accept either of those things. The third thing that we will be told guaranteed is, well, in this day and age, people's attention spans, they can't cope with long matches, we'll have to shorten it. There's no scientific evidence to back that up, by the way, literally none. But we'll be told that, and if you're told something often enough, people believe it. I don't want to mention the Triple Crown here, but the fact is, if something is repeated often enough, people will believe it. So if it leaves the Crucible, you can pretty much guarantee the format will change, and it won't be the World Championship as we know it. I'm not saying it won't be a great event and a thrilling event. It won't be this very special format. It's a weird format. It's eccentric. It's played in a very specific venue. It will change if it moves. There's no prospect of the Crucible being knocked down and rebuilt. I mean, how does that work for the Crucible? How are they going to earn money the rest of the year when it's knocked down and they're rebuilding it, first off? But secondly, it's a white elephant. If they increase the size of it massively, you know, they don't want a 3,000 seat theatre. That's not a thing, okay, in Britain, other than a couple of places in London. So at the moment, we're still in that stage where we don't really know. The smart money seems to be it's going to leave, but it's not guaranteed. As I say, if they really wanted to go to Saudi Arabia, they would have announced it by now. The fact that they haven't retained some hope, certainly for the UK and maybe for the Crucible. And as we move to the email, Stuart May has written in here. He says, a great first 5 days at the Crucible with 4 final frame deciders to enjoy. No doubt that will be my quota for this year, already used up, but we'll see. A lot of talk of Crexit. Now, this is a term that that Stuart has formed based on, obviously, Brexit. So Crexit is the exiting the Crucible. He says, a lot of talk of Crexit since the arrival of Barry Hearn on our screens yesterday. I must say both Hazel Irvin and Rachel Casey were brilliant in their handling of their respective interviews with Ken and Steve, posing important points. Yeah, I agree with that. I thought Ken brought the emotional side, and actually Steve Davis, you know, he's a friend of Barry's, but he actually pointed out a couple of things as well. Stuart continues, it would have been nice to have not had this issue front and foremost while the spectacle of the tournament is ongoing, but since it's been brought up, here are my thoughts. I don't believe for 1 minute that the decision to leave the Crucible will have anything to do with capacity. This is just an excuse to diverge the blame elsewhere when it inevitably goes. Barry himself said in an interview previously that the revenue they get from the World Championship is not from ticket sales but from TV rights. I don't know enough about the subject to form a qualified opinion, but my hunch is the ultimate aim is to have the World Snooker Championship on the Matchroom streaming platform. Moving out of the UK would mean the BBC would not be host broadcasters beyond 2027. Anyway, enough speculation. Let's enjoy the rest of the tournament for what happens on the Green Bays. I said in a previous rather epic email, the clusters and gaps between birth years of world champions. Oh, indeed, you did. You mentioned Jackson Page, a possible next-gen champ, is approximately 6 years on from Brazil. A more likely candidate is CJOE, born 2002, plus Joe O'Connor would be within the Brazil generation, as born 1995 also. Maybe not this year, but surely both potential future champions. Other yet-to-be-world champions still in the tournament within their respective generations would be Milkins, born in 76, Tom Ford, born in 83. Conversely, Dave McGuire, Gilbert Allen, Jamie Jones, Corin Wilson, and Jack Jones would join Joe Johnson as an outlier from a generation were they to be crowned champion. Keep up the good work with your, in my opinion, leading snooker podcast. Well, that's a nice opinion to have, Stuart, and thank you for introducing the word Crexit. I don't personally agree with your theory that they're trying to get it on Matchroom. I mean, it's already on Matchroom Live in certain territories, but I think that the guaranteed broadcast revenue from BBC and Eurosport would trump anything they could make on there. Ticket sales is an interesting issue you raise. Of course, they don't pay to hire the Crucible, so the tickets they do sell, and it's basically every seat, every session, is all profit for them. Other venues, of course, you might have to pay to hire. But anyway, thank you for that. Obviously, a lot of people are interested in this subject, quite understandably, because it is... I was talking to someone earlier, actually. They were saying, it's the, like you talk about in tennis, you have Roland Garros and Flushing Meadow and obviously Wimbledon. In golf, you have Augusta and St Andrews. The Crucible really is the only venue that means anything, really, emotionally to people because of its history. And so a lot of people have got opinions on this. And Lee Wall has said, I just finished my 2-day trip to the Crucible. It's my 5th year visiting since my first trip in 2018, and nothing much seems to have changed. I mean that as a positive. The history and atmosphere of the tournament and venue is unique. It combines the best of a sporting and theatre crowd, engrossed but respectful to the performers. I feel the knowledgeable crowd aspect is sometimes overstated. There are plenty of casual fans, as well as hardcore aficionados, but any visitor quickly understands and embraces the etiquette. Anybody acting up in the venue is very conspicuous. It seems to me that the diversity of the crowd, particularly the age range, is sometimes overlooked. And for an event of its stature, the ticket prices are relatively cheap, at least for the first week. And I agree with your suggestion on Tuesday's pod that the first round is the best round. Seeing Barry Hearn on the BBC today, he looked genuinely baffled that anyone would make a business decision that was not predominantly based on money. What a sad point of view. I almost felt sorry for him. Yeah, I mean, like I say, it was quite stark what he was saying, but there were rings of truth to it as well. One thing I would say is, I mean, one point he made is there are a lot of people who have been priced out at going to the Crucible because it is pure economics. It's supply and demand. If there's only X number of tickets, they can sell them for a certain price. I had an email from someone who's been going for over 40 years, can't afford to go this year. So that is an issue, without question, and people do miss out. But I do also have some sympathy for his position. I think one thing we should say, and this is a side issue, why is Barry Hearn still doing these interviews? I mean, he retired as World Snooker Chairman 2 years ago, didn't he? We don't see the chairman, Steve Dawson. I really feel he should be out there doing these interviews, but that's a side issue. There are threats because of the strength of snooker, and we're victims in a way of our own success. There are threats of other promoters coming in, offering money to players. I don't think you need to be the biggest genius in the world to see that Mark Williams is considering playing not on the World Snooker Tour, but in other tournaments. There's talk of a breakaway sort of elite circuit just for top players in big cities. Events actually that sound really good, but whether they'll have as much credibility outside of the World Snooker Tour because they won't contain all the top players, I don't know. I mean, that's going to be played out over the sort of coming weeks, I guess. We understand players have been offered money to join that tour. We'll see who does and who doesn't in due course. But this is why World Snooker were right to actually take the Saudi money. I know a lot of people were against it for non-sporting reasons, and that's fair enough. But if they hadn't, there was nothing to stop the Saudis coming to all the players and saying, look, World Snooker won't take our money, but we'll pay you to come and play on a circuit that we set up. And then that would be the end of all the big events that we know. So they were kind of forced into doing it just before the Crucible. And this is why at the World Championship this story sort of blew up over the course of the tournament. It was announced that Riyadh Season were sort of partners of this event. You see their name on the branding. Ronnie O'Sullivan's their ambassador. So they have got more involved, and that's why people understandably started to think, well, maybe, you know, the World Championship's off there. But, you know, like I say, you can't uninvent capitalism. And a lot of the players do actually agree. I saw on social media a lot of the players agreeing with Barry's stance yesterday. We'll continue, though. Phil Spivey, he says, what a start to the tournament. Snooker never disappoints. Interesting to hear Barry Hearn in the BBC studio. I'm desperate for the World Championship to remain at the Crucible. However, I can see his point of view that World Snooker have a duty towards the players. And if they can double prize money by going to another venue, of course they have to consider it. I hope they don't, though. That said, I have a prediction based on nothing more than a gut feeling. World Snooker Tour will extend the current Crucible contract for a further short period of maybe 3 to 5 years, giving Sheffield an extra opportunity to meet their demands for a bigger venue in the city. It's been much commented on about the strength of the qualifiers this year. By my reckoning, only 4 players in the entire field, Jamie Jones, Robbie Williams, Jack Jones and Jackson Page, have never appeared in a ranking event final. That just shows the quality and strength in depth. In most of the matches, it's barely a surprise if the seeded player loses. Anyway, here's hoping for more drama in the coming days. That's a great stat, isn't it? 28 players of the 32 opinion ranking finals. We don't absolutely know, you know, maybe that it's extended. There's a lot of kite flying as well going on here. There's a lot of sort of speaking through the media for other people to hear. Barry, I think, genuinely does want Sheffield City Council to come up with something. But, you know, I was going to the Crucible 20 years ago, and we were told, as a matter of fact, China won the World Championship, it'll go to China, Sheffield need to do something. And one year they came up with this idea, they announced plans for a billiard drome, it was called. They were going to build it in the city, a bigger venue, So we might start the event at the Crucible. We'd move to the Billiardrome for the sort of semis and final, and it would be great. There'd be 3,000 seats, etc., etc. It was all announced. They kept the contract, Sheffield, as a result, and then it was never built. Nobody ever asked why, or nobody ever went back to it, because, frankly, nobody wanted it there anyway. They wanted it at the Crucible. So we'll see. I think there's a bit of a road to run yet before we actually find out exactly, you know, what's gonna happen with this. We've had more on this. Matt Tarrant has been there. Matt Tarrant has been to the Crucible. He said that three snooker trips in Sheffield in the last week ranked in order. Okay, so this is from three down to one. Number three, the World Snooker Tour podcast at the Crucible on the eve of the tournament. Very disappointing. The two snooker world champions were interesting enough, the hosts less so. There may have been some overutilisation of the sponsor's product. More awkward than amusing. 5 out of 10. I wasn't there. I did listen to Matt to the recording. I thought Stephen Hendry spoke well about the Crucible. Judd Trump as well. I thought some of the other things that were said were wholly inappropriate for the promoters of the tournament. That's up to them, but I didn't think it was a great sort of pitch to come and be part of our world championship, frankly. Anyway, number two, final session of the first round clash between Stuart Bingham and Gary Wilson. Not the highest quality and not close in the end, but the pressure and the tension were telling. I like Gary Wilson. He has the game to win tournaments, as he's proven this season. But does he have the temperament to win the biggest trophies? Not on Monday night's evidence. Frustration got the better of him. In the last couple of frames, he appeared to simply want it to end. 8 out of 10. And number one, qualifying the first judgment day. £12 for this feast of snooker with a choice of tables and such a huge prize up for grabs. Just brilliant. I'll be back for this next year. 10 out of 10. My outside bet, Stephen Maguire, marches on. £2 at 126 to 1 before he qualifies. Now 34 to 1 in the easier half of the draw. He can't meet Judd or Ronnie until the final, which in my view, he has as good a chance of reaching as anyone else in the top half. This feels like an epic year already. As always, there'll be stories aplenty. Drama, passion, heartbreak and euphoria. Bring it on. Well, thank you, Matt, and I'm glad you enjoyed the qualifying. And, why don't we segue into that? Alpha Ponzi, he says, I'm totally immersed in the drama that only the Crucible can provide. I'm aware these podcasts are only bite-sized, so I'll save my three quick ones for the post-Crucible review and quickly comment on the qualifiers. I really enjoyed the Judgment Day coverage, except the cracks about Dominic Dell's choice of walk-on music, which Rob Walker and Ken Doherty found oddly hilarious, but due to work commitments was unable to catch the last frames of the O'Connor-Selt match. In defence of the correspondent who called the World Snooker higher-up who pulled the plug moronic, they could have left the stream running and let you, Rob and Ken, go home, allowing those who wanted to watch the end the chance to do so. The decision to end the stream wasn't moronic, but as it was the final qualifier for the game showpiece event, it was a little obtuse. Other than that, I give everyone who worked on Judgment Day their well-earned props. Well, thank you, Alpha. As I say, I agree with that, and I think Will Snook agree with it. It was just a kind of, it was an error, but, you know, we move on. Andrew, just a quick note to say thanks as always for the podcast. Really enjoying it, particularly as a way to keep up with big tournament when I can't watch snooker during the day because of the day job. That said, I did get a chance to watch the last two frames of the Lazowski-Ding match this lunchtime and was really impressed with Jack in the decider. It's exactly the kind of situation where we've seen Jack wilt before, but he seemed to calmly convert this one. Such a great player to watch. I hope he goes deep in the championship. It also made me think that for all the talk about the quality of the Crucible Theatre hosting the biggest tournament in snooker, the vast majority of people will experience the competition through the TV coverage. As a view of that coverage, I have zero complaints about the venue. Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, Jack was brilliant in that decider, wasn't he? And there's just a sort of sense of him being sort of kind of ready for a big run, maybe? I don't know. We got carried away before, I know that, but I thought that was a great match. Ding did a little wrong. When you look at some of the people who won not playing great, Ding played really well and lost. But that's a tribute to Jack Lazowski. Jack's on it this year, I think. Mark Williams, not that one. Thanks again for your excellent commentary podcast and exceptional Judgment Day coverage with Ken and Rob. Why is it in this country people seem to focus on throwing out negativity about the snooker, the venues, the people involved in the sport and anything they possibly can? Not dwelling on this, but doesn't it get a bit tiresome? I'm referring to Twitter warriors, which I tend not to look at too much. Constructive criticism accepted, though, when put across correctly. Well, I think everyone, without going on about this, I think everyone agrees Twitter's gone downhill, hasn't it? But anyway, we continue. It's not even called Twitter now. It's called something else. Mark continues. A bit has been said about Hussein Vafai and his comments, but I personally don't take too much out of what he said. He just lost and could have been embarrassed and angry with his performance. And remember, he's got previous for mouthing off. At least he gets folk talking, and he's not the only one to come out with some controversy recently. Now, isn't he, Mr. O'Sullivan? Yes, his comments weren't justified, but he'll just have to justify his snooker by winning on the table. So far, there have been great matches, although a few seeds are out. It's not really that much of a surprise, as all the players are great and have mostly been at the Crucible before. I must say a very well done to Joe O'Connor, who's done exceptionally well. We've seen a few nail-biters too. The Rob Milkins Pang Jung Zhu wasn't great quality, but what an exciting ending. I was gutted Mark Williams went out. That was another nail-biter and could have gone either way. But very well done to Si Jia Wei. What a player he is. Lots of bottle, lots of nerves. There'll be lots more ups and downs, upsets and celebrations to come as the championship progresses. And to say I'm excited is an understatement, as I'm fulfilling a lifelong dream and attending the Crucible in the coming weekend onwards. I'm looking forward to experiencing the aroma of snooker in Sheffield and all the Crucible tensions to come. P.S. A big shout out to Alan McManus's daily podcast. Isn't it great? Please pass this on to him. Yes, he's still going strong every morning, is Alan. I was saying before you mentioned there, of course, he's taken a lot of stick this week for some quite sort of, I found them quite crass comments about the Crucible. Look, you can have whatever opinion you want about the venue, but it's just the way he expressed it. I would say from the off, Hussain Vafai is a very charming person. If you speak to him, he's very friendly, quite engaging, but he's by no means alone in this, by no means alone. He's a bit of a sore loser. We saw what happened in Leicester, the World Grand Prix, Mark Williams, where he sort of stomped off for no apparent reason. Slightly different, but obviously last year he sort of had a go at Ronnie. He creates headlines, which is great, but I think what really offended people when he sort of said the Crucible smells, that's a sort of very childish comment. If you don't like the venue, you're entitled to say that. But a few years ago, Mark Williams called the Crucible, well, it was a rude word that he used asterisks in on social media. He got fined £4,000 for that. Now, I didn't agree with that, and I'm not saying for a minute Hossein Vafai should be fined. But they took a very hard line with Mark Williams when he said something off about it. I just didn't agree with what Hossein said. I thought it was just unnecessary, and it looked like he was just, you know, not happy at losing. But of course, it descended into the usual sort of whataboutery, because the pundits, and I think it was Alan and Jimmy on Eurosport, were taken to task because, oh, you didn't have a go at X, Y, and Z. Well, they weren't asked about X, Y, and Z. They were asked specifically about Hossein Vafai, and they gave an answer based on what he'd said. They weren't asked about anybody else. Those two don't pull their punches. They'll say what they think, and that's good. Yeah, I thought it was a shame he said it, but, you know, he doesn't seem to mind sort of creating controversy. And frankly, we kind of need a bit of that, really. The opposite to that, of course, is Dominic Dale, who doesn't create controversy. And Joe Richards has written in. He said, great to see Dominic Dale at the World Championship. What an absolute gem of a person he is. Very gracious in defeat against Karen Wilson. I feel like being a good person and a gentleman is underrated these days. I value it a lot, though. And I feel like having a bit of integrity and self-respect is something to be proud of. I'm sure Dominic will be disappointed losing 10-1. Getting to the world championship of any sport is incredible, though. Imagine being in the top 32 of anything in life. What an achievement. It makes me laugh when people look at a result like that and laugh when they've not even been in the top 32,000 at anything in their life. Never mind the top 32. A bit of perspective is needed at times. Karen Wilson could have another run to the final this year. It looks likely one of Murphy, Allen and Wilson could reach the final, although it would be naive to rule out John Higgins or one of the others. Could be few more shocks to come yet, but my money would be on Allen or Murphy or Wilson. Enjoy the rest of the championship in Sheffield. Thank you, Joe. Dominic, I thought, behaved with a lot of class, as you'd expect. I saw him actually because he's back with Eurosport now commentating, and he was just saying he didn't settle. And if you don't settle against a top player, they will, you know, just get on top of you. And Karen was there to do a job, and he did a job. But Dominic didn't disgrace himself. He made a century in the frame he lost. Sorry, in the frame he won. And to get there, and as you say, conduct himself with that degree of class and make time for people. You know, I agree with your sentiments there. Sachinder here, he said, you still have the best snooker podcast, even though I may be in a minority of one. Well, you may well be, but anyway, thank you for listening. Jokes aside, this is a little gripe I've had for a while, and I'd appreciate your views. When Rob Walker introduces the players, I don't like him having a little joke at the players' expense, and find it actually disrespectful. I know Robbie's great for the game, and he may have a personal relationship with that particular player, but to have the player walking into the arena amongst giggles aimed at him doesn't really do anything for the player. They should be respected because at the end of the day, we're paying to watch them. And it would be better if Rob listed the players' achievements or accolades. Well, thank you, Satjinder. I mean, all I say about that is everyone has their own style. I do not envy Rob Walker's job. It's a very tough job, that, because you're going out every session, and there's a lot of sessions. I think it's something like 46 sessions of snooker during the World Championship. And you're trying to make everyone special for the audience, because there'll be a lot of people there who only attend that session. It's their only time at the Crucible that year, and you're trying to make it special for them. You're trying to make it special for the players. And you're trying to come up with, I guess, different ways of doing it and introducing the players and making it sound fresh and sounding enthusiastic. And no one's ever done that better than Rob. You know, he's brilliant at that. Style and the actual words that he uses, that's a matter of taste, and people's taste is different. But I do respect the job he does. Richard, meanwhile, writes, just before each session, you can see the players waiting in the corridor in front of the board showing the list of former champions. If the player has got an MBE or OBE, that is shown on the board. For example, Ronnie O'Sullivan OBE. It just occurred to me that this probably means nothing to most people watching around the world. If they research the meaning on the internet, they'll find out this is a UK Commonwealth thing. This is probably not ideal when we're trying to portray snooker as a global sport. I like this email, Richard, because it's very niche. It really is. I've got no interest really in OBEs and MBEs personally, but the fact is these people have been awarded them, and good luck to them. You know, they've represented the snooker very well between them. So I don't mind them being on the board, but equally I wouldn't mind them if they weren't. The big scandal, and you know, you've sort of stumbled into it a little bit here, and it's only been shown a couple of times because it's right on the other side, the left-hand side of the board. They spelt John Pullman's name wrong, okay? And that's a fact. They've got John Pullman is with one L, and they've got two Ls. And this is the big scandal. Never mind the Crucible. Get Barry Hearn back in the studio. Why is John Pullman's name spelt wrong? John Pullman, a champion in the sort of post-war era, he won when it was on a challenge basis, so he just played one of the player in a series of matches. But the fact is he won the World Championship, and they should get his name right, and they haven't. And, you know, John Pullman, a great figure in the sport. He was a BBC and ITV commentator. A great voice. He commentated on the first Maximum, Steve Davis. Anyway, his name's spelt wrong. So that's more of an issue than the OBEs and MBEs. Brian Kilty, he described himself as long first, which I assume means long-time listener, first-time emailer. Says, sitting here, this is Brian, he says, sitting here watching Ryan Day, Barry Hawkins playing an epic first round match. Day's just hit a magnificent screw shot on the green to come back three quarters of the way back up the table to the brown to wedge ahead 9-8. Indeed, I mean, that was, that's got to be one of the shots of the championship, surely. Barry had chances only to see Ryan snatch the frame. Of course, Ryan then strolls over to sit right beside Barry in the shared seating area in the two table setup. Do the players mind being so close to each other, do you know? Obviously, we've had the Ronnie Alley shoulder charge and now the infamous David Taylor mysterious table episode, but are you aware of any ill will between players seated so close at the Crucible in the form of gestures or verbals or anything? It's awkward because it's the only tournament it happens in, and of course, it's the biggest tournament. It is one of the dynamics of the Crucible. You can guarantee if it went to a bigger venue, they wouldn't be sat there, but it's always been part of it. And my theory is you see quite a few players going out between frames now, and I think a lot of that is to stop actually having to sit by the opponent. Because it's uncomfortable. In terms of unpleasantness, no, not really. I mean, I think it's a little bit of gamesmanship sometimes when one player tries to chat to the other and maybe the other one doesn't want to. But also it's sort of natural in a way to talk sat so close. It is uncomfortable, but that's, again, that's part of the sort of Crucible vibe, I guess. Kevin Booth, he says, I'll write this email after 4 days of attending the Crucible. I go every year and normally do 11 days, but due to price increases, I've had to cut back this year. I'll be there Sunday, though, for the second round match in the morning. One issue from previous years is when in the arena, the lighting rigs, which have the TV screens on, the scoreboard used to be replicated on the screens. Now, although it's still partly replicated, the banner with the scoring sequence and player changes along with the number of reds and colours is no longer shown on the rigs. When sitting close to the front, the scoreboard near the marker can be seen, so no issue. The problem is further back, this is gone. And it's also convenient to use it if keeping an eye on the other table. Do you know why this change has happened? I mentioned it to Will Snook on the Sunday, but by Monday night it was still the same. Great podcast as always. I don't know, Kevin. Thanks for the email. It's an important point for people who are attending. I don't know whether that's because of the change of scoring system. Maybe the layout of the scoreboard is different. I'm not quite sure if that's what you mean, but you've made them aware of it, so hopefully they'll look into that because, you know, you want to try and keep across, I understand, all the matches. Duncan. Excellent first weekend at Sheffield. This is obviously written a few days ago. Maguire, I love watching. So determined and passionate. And shows a bit of aggression, which I think is great. On to my main point. How tiresome the complaints are about this great venue being too small. We must move it to Saudi Arabia. Hossein's comments were pathetic, and he seemed to be almost mimicking his best friend again, O'Sullivan. The cynic in me would say it's all a bit coordinated. Hossein, Ronnie and others, I'm sure, are not forced to sleep rough in Sheffield. Anyway, the snooker's been really good so far, and Williams Lazowski still to come. Well, Mark's gone, obviously. Coverage on Eurosport as good as ever. I look forward to listening to the next podcast on your excellent show. Well, thank you. The passions are running high, I think, about the Crucible, aren't they? Philip in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm aware I'm rushing through these, but I'm trying to keep the time down a little bit. Philip is in Madison, Wisconsin. He says, the world champs here, how time flies. I've two random questions. Number one, Judd Trump mentioned in his post-match interview with Eurosport that he played a long pot and wasn't sure if the red was going in. I don't remember his exact words, but something to the effect of he heard the commentators say it's in before it dropped into the pocket. Can the players actually hear the commentators? Or maybe it's from the radio pieces in the audience. Those radio, obviously people sat in the front row, if they've got those on, you kind of can hear a bit of whispering. But the commentary box is so close, if a particular commentator, and John Virgo will be an example of this, he's very good at raising his voice to match the occasion. In the silence, even though the glass is supposed to be soundproof, sometimes it does bleed out. You can hear the odd thing. I think that's all it is. It's the odd thing. And question two, why do some players wear watches when they play? Most wear it on the bridge hand, but some actually wear watches on the cue hand. Surely it impacts the delicate delivery of the cue action. Are they sponsored by the watch companies? Looking forward to the rest of the World Championship with your excellent commentary and podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much. I suspect some of them are paid to wear them, yeah. Although Ronnie wears that sort of Casio number, doesn't he? He goes the other way, which is quite funny. I don't know why you need a watch on, really, to be perfectly honest. When you're playing snooker, but I can only imagine there must be money changing hands. Alan in the Peak District, he said, I'm very much looking forward to attending the Crucible. I'm currently in Riga in Latvia. Just so happens the bar we're in is across from a snooker club. That's brilliant. He said, what happened to the Riga Masters? What did happen to it? Good question. It was 2019 was the last one, Alan, and obviously COVID came along, but it may be that, you know, there are certain events they sort of have to pay their own way, and it maybe it just didn't. But it's a shame, I think, when we've gone to places and, you know, and don't go back there, I suppose. I'm rushing through again, but Keith, he says, it's good to see a new set. It was overdue for a refresh. But is anyone else thinking the players' seating areas are a bit strange? The colours and design don't match the rest of the arena, and despite the new raised step, shorter players are almost peering over the wall to see the table. These are minor quibbles, though. Great tournament so far. And on a similar subject, Declan writes, am I right in saying that this year, for the first time, the barrier in front of the spectators is chest high? So all we see on the TV screen is the spectators' heads, whereas we used to be able to see them from the knee up. I'm guessing this is a security solution to prevent the recurrence of last year's disturbance with the protest. The audience no longer seem on top of the players. They've sealed off the audience, and with it some of the drama. How tragic. You just see these small heads peeping over a barrier. That must make the players feel far less exposed, which will help them stabilise at vulnerable moments, taking some of the heat out of the crucible. When authorities clamp down, why must they always go too far, betraying anxiety and paranoia for all future events? I'm not sure it is that, Joseph. I think the reason is it's an LED set now, which means they can play in graphics and adverts and stuff, content on the set, which they never used to have at the crucible. And I think that the reason that it's higher is just because that's the format of it. I don't think it is to do with the protest. I say that, I mean, no one's told me either way, but that's my reading of it. It's an LED set, so it just is higher because of that. John Hill, some general musings regarding the World Championship in Sheffield. If the World Championship moves somewhere else after 2027, which I think is highly likely, then a possible solution would be to move the UK Championship to Sheffield at the Crucible. This would potentially allow for a longer format UK and keeps a prestigious tournament in Sheffield. Alongside that, potentially move the British Open to a new home at the Barbican in York, as it's an iconic venue for snooker now. The situation seems like a win-win for WST. They can put the onus on Sheffield Council to come up with a bigger venue solution and keep the world champs, but this would be at the council's cost, not WST. If the council can't provide that solution, the WST can move it elsewhere and reap the financial gains and say, we gave Sheffield every chance to work with us for a solution. I can't see that Sheffield City Council would invest such huge sums on a new venue that in reality could only be a max capacity for a few weeks of the year. Well, I think you're absolutely right, John. I'm not a fan of putting other tournaments there, because I think the UK Championship, look, if the argument is that the Crucible isn't big enough for the World Championship, then it's not big enough for the UK either, if they've got a bigger venue where they can sell tickets. Here's my suggestion, right? And, you know, we're a niche podcast, I don't doubt that. Bring back the Kit Kat break for World Champions. That's my plea to snooker bosses, okay? Now, this was a tournament, it was only held once, 1985, and it was sponsored by Kit Kat. This is the 80s, anyone would sponsor snooker, it seems. And the tournament was quite interesting. It was all former world champions. So they played, if you'd won the world championship, you got to play in a tournament just for you. My plan is this, okay, slightly tweak it. You could have a weekend tournament at the Crucible. If we leave the Crucible, we could go back there maybe for a couple of days with the last eight winners of the world championship. They get to play in their own tournament for, you know, for whatever money it is. And they're crowned sort of almost world champion of champions. So starting from now, the last eight world champions will be Luca Brasel, Ronnie O'Sullivan, Mark Selby, Judd Trump, Mark Williams, Stuart Bingham, John Higgins and Neil Robertson. Okay, now if someone else won it this year, Neil Robertson would drop out and so on and so on. But so the last eight winners of the World Championship could play their own event at the Crucible, and that would honour that venue and the importance that it's had to snooker history, even if the World Championship has left. I say, and this is the big campaign that I'm starting on the podcast, bring back the Kit Kat break for world champions. And if you're with me, we'll be meeting in Hyde Park on Saturday at 2 o'clock with placards. We'll be marching through the streets all the way to Downing Street to handing in a petition. So do join me for that as we try and bring back this event. Now, James writes, this is a rather excited email, this, but that's fine. I hope you're well and enjoying the most wonderful time of the year. I've just listened to episode 300 and I could not let I'm sure no one really cares about this being the 300th episode, comment pass. I care. As do, I'm sure, thousands of others. We love snooker, we love this podcast, and we love you. Well, that's a bit gushing, James, but thank you. It's a great achievement reaching that milestone, so I just wanted to say well done, thank you, and please keep up the good work. As I'm emailing in, I may as well let you know the obvious Crucible solution that I've been boring everyone who are listening with. Let the Worlds go somewhere else for more money, and move the UK Championships to the Crucible. Simples. Well, of course, I've just dealt with that, James, and you'll have heard my impassioned plea to bring back the Kit Kat break for world champions, and that's going to be a campaign that I'm going to be carrying on with, for at least one more episode. and we're going to have to finish now because there's other things going on. But Topi, I hope I pronounced your name right, Topi in Finland, which is there's a big snooker community there, I know, but he says, greetings, sir. I say he may be a she, but anyway, greetings from Finland. Love listening to the podcast, very informative content. I have a couple of questions to which I'm not sure you can answer, but it's quite often when watching snooker, the scoreboard stopped working. Some tournament this season, they showed the screen that shows the score to the players, and the software that was running didn't work. What I saw then was that it was installed on Windows 7, which is already an outdated operating system. Could this be a reason for the scoreboard not working? I understand the software is not so complicated that it would need newer operating system, and the problems aren't always the info on the screen, but the info that the audience sees. I'm not sure if it's connected straight to the same info. Yeah, I don't know about that, to be honest, but touch wood, there's been no problems at the Crucible. The other question is about the microphones the commentators use. In the World Championship qualifiers, we were shown the view from the booth, and I saw that you held the microphone very close to your mouth with the other hand. Why does it need to be so complicated? Doesn't a good headset get the job done? Sorry for the minor rant. Love the podcast. It's a very niche rant, and I respect that. But, in terms of the qualifying, I used the microphone I was given. I was told to use it. It was a lit mic, and I was told to use it. Eurosport this week were using headsets with a microphone built in. But, you know, you just use what you're given, basically. Hopefully that answers that. I think that's it. Well, as I say, that is it, because we've got to finish there, because there's a World Championship going on. But if we've learnt nothing else, it's that the Kit Kat break for World Champions could be the answer to this whole drama. I might suggest that to Barry. Anyway, thanks for listening. We're sort of through the first week as such in terms of the first round. There's only one match at the moment. John Higgins, we'll see whether he gets through tonight. He might be through by the time he listens to this. But at the moment, there's only one match between two seeds in round two. That's Judd Trump against Tom Ford. It is wide open. I thought Ronnie O'Sullivan looked very professional. I loved the way he spoke afterwards. He actually bigged himself up for once, which you don't often hear from him. It's usually the opposite. But he spoke very confidently. He looks very focused on this event. But there's a lot of other players here who will, you know, think they can beat him. And we'll see whether they're right, I guess. Hopefully, I'll be back next week. Do more of the same and keep your emails coming in. snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. That's snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. But that's it. And hope everyone's enjoying the coverage. I'm sure you are enjoying the tournament. If you're at the Crucible, if you're watching, wherever you're watching, keep doing so. Because we're only really just getting started. I mean, you know, Sullivan looked good, but he's got to win another 61 frames to be world champion. There's a long way to go. In a week's time, we'll have the semi-finals. I don't need to go any further. So anyway, thanks for listening. And for now, as we always say, goodbye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.